Octavio in our chat says, hello from Mexico. I love this news show. Well, we love you, Octavio. Nice to have you and all of you who are here watching us live. You can watch us live every day at 4 p.m. Eastern time, 1 p.m. Pacific time, 9 p.m. GMT time. What time is it in Australia right now? Let us know. Let us know. We got a lot of Australians.
It's the morning for those effers.
For those efforts over there, that's right. yes, and we have a daily newsletter. I want all of you to subscribe to it because it's free and it's fantastic, and you can be informed while you have your cup of coffee in the morning or late at night whenever you're reading it. Just go to redacted.inc. It's totally free to sign up. You can, again, read it in about 5 to 10 minutes over your favorite beverage of choice. We cover about 5 or 6 stories in there. I should mention that it's also a place for us to stay connected, because as we've covered stories as it relates to Pfizer and in the war in Ukraine in the past, these big tech companies have loved to censor us in the past, take us down for a week, block us for a week. I mean, this is what happens, right? And this is a way for us. We're not even able to publish anything, right, David? We can't do anything to to YouTube. We can't publish a comment. We can't do anything, right? Oh, you're muted. David's muted. But what he's saying to all of you is
that the rules are, if you get one of these strikes, they punish you by taking down the offending video and making it so that you can't publish or comment or otherwise interact for a cooling off period of 1 to 2 weeks. That's how YouTube works. You know, we have appealed these decisions before, and it, you know, to no avail. So right now we are going to play by the rules of engagement, but at the same time, we do want to foster our own community so that if we can no longer play by those rules, we still have a community to discuss.
And can right. You hear me now?
Now we can hear you.
We can hear you now.
Okay, yes. Cool. Yeah, no, all I was saying is you even have a community feed and you can't post there and you can't even like pin a comment. So if you want to go to a video and pin a comment on those videos to let people know in your most recent videos, they won't even let you do that. Like, you can do nothing.
Yeah. So it's like silence. And then people like are posting. They're like, where'd you guys go? And we're like, we can't even type anything to you because we're punished. We're punished.
Well, and think about this. The rule is that you should only get like 1 minute for however many, like if you're raising kids and you give them a timeout, like a 5-year-old should get 5 minutes and a 10-year-old should get 10 minutes. That's what some doctors say, according to my baby book. So like, that is cruel and unusual punishment.
Why are you leaning so far?
Because I'm looking at you. Well, okay. Oh, I guess.
And think about this. Like one of the issues with, like, imagine if somebody calls the cops on somebody, they show up at your house. It doesn't matter if you're innocent or what, but the neighbors think all of a sudden that you're guilty because the police were at your house. It's the same thing. Like, people that don't know, we were talking about the jab and then all of a sudden we're down. They're going to be like, oh, they must have been talking about, like, they must be wrong. You know, the information they shared must be lies or misinformation.
That we're purposely being misleading when really the things that we have been punished for have been reading documents that Pfizer published on their own. Right.
On their own website, their own documents we were covering.
And they didn't like it.
Yeah.
And other things that we will not repeat and get punished right now. So right now we're going to talk about the news. Then.
Yes,
let's
that's right.
Do that.
Before we do that, I want you to all hit that like button. Very, very important, because it pushes us further out into the algorithm. We are up against the algorithm beasts that suppress and hide this type of content in favor of mainstream media. So please just smash that like button. It actually, while we are live, it really helps the show. And subscribe, because we're here live every day, Monday through Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern time. So without further ado, you might be asking yourself, now what? Hey, what in the world is next now that Nancy Pelosi flew into Taiwan for, was it fewer than like 24 hours? I mean, she was there for like...
It was a quickie.
She turned around. It was like a tantric quickie because it was like sting level tantric quickie. She spent about 10 hours there or so, maybe a little longer. I don't know.
I'm not following that analogy,
You don't know the sting story about tantric? You don't know that story?
How they have hour-long climaxes?
Or just, you know, copulation, not the actual climax itself. I'm sure that's very short.
Yeah, they're trying to prolong the climax.
I don't want to talk about this at all in relationship to Nancy Pelosi. That should not be allowed.
That's maybe the only way. That's the only way.
It's
the only way it's palatable to talk about Nancy Pelosi. Anyway, Nancy Pelosi was there for just a short amount of time, like fewer than 24 hours. Turned around, flew out. But you're probably wondering, like, well, what the hell now, right? She was there. She was escorted by this number astounds me. She was escorted by at least 8 U.S. warplanes. Okay, 8 8 U.S. warplanes had to fly her in there, F-30, F-15s. The price tag for her visit to Taiwan, estimated now at $90 million. We'll get an exact number, but that's the preliminary number. $90 million it cost Nancy Pelosi to fly into Taipei Airport for this like short little trip.
Wow.
What do we get for that? Maybe a start of a new war with China? Is that the goal here?
We absolutely will get sanctions. So our goods will be more expensive, if you can believe that, right? And we will get increased amount of rhetoric about protecting Taiwan now. And we will get the opportunity to send money and lend lease weapons there. That's what we get for it. So you can decide.
Well, and I just want to kind of
think that's a good return on investment for your tax monies.
Yeah.
Well, I want to put it in perspective a bit. So a lot of people don't know this, but like when you have presidential candidates, like when all the like Bush and all those guys that were just running in the elections, they get security. They get what is the security that
Secret Service,
right. And to the tune of about $50,000 a day each candidate. So if you think about that, that's probably like two people, I would assume, maybe. So how many people went, like, was it two full planes of people that went with Pelosi on this?
I mean, it was a full United States, you know, Air Force One level aircraft, right? And then a whole contingent of people, right? And then the 8 warplanes, and then all of the surrounding aircraft carriers. There was an aircraft carrier reportedly, and multiple warships that were also engaged in this area to protect her on this visit. So just think about that level of money.
So we're probably only talking about $90 million in, you know, regular costs. We're probably not even into the military budget that it costs to go yet.
I think that is the military cost, right? For the war planes and the
F-15s. I don't know the itemized numbers on this. I don't know how it all breaks down. I just think it's astounding. And so when I ask myself, okay, what do we get as Americans, right? If you live in the United States of America and you spent that money from your tax dollars to pay for Nancy Pelosi to go there, maybe to check up on her investments.
Taiwan semiconductor plants.
Maybe that's what you get. But I know what you get. You get Taiwan is going to be punished in all of this. So this is Shashank Joshi, an economist, who says, you know, Taiwan ultimately is going to be the one who's going to suffer here. Listen.
I think we're going to see a very deliberate and considered effort, a campaign to punish Taiwan for welcoming Pelosi, to signal its isolation from its international partners, and to demonstrate how much has changed since the 30 years have passed since we last had, or 25 years have passed since we last had a crisis of this magnitude.
Now, you mentioned sanctions. We're already seeing that. So sanctions are already about to unfold from China against Taiwan.
Yes, and most likely the United States will then respond in kind and issue its own sanctions. You know, will it be something that even most American people understand? Who knows? But this will be a two-way fight.
So this is a map. I want to show you this map of China's mainland on the left and Taiwan on the right. Take a look at this. Let's zoom in, though, so you can see something interesting here. These are the Kinmen Islands. I'm going to zoom in as we keep going closer and closer and closer. You'll see here, let me adjust the map here. And there you go. Those are the Kinmen Islands right there in the center of your screen. These are Taiwanese-controlled islands, and they sit awfully close to China's mainland. Very, very close, in fact. So close, in fact, that Xiamen City, where last night we showed you significant troop movement and tanks lining up for something. Interesting. What are tanks and amphibious assault vehicles doing, lining up in that area? Well, arguably, and military analysts this afternoon that we spoke to saying, this is the first target. This arguably would be the first target of invasion. So not mainland Taiwan, the Kinmen Islands, taking over the Kinmen Islands and showing China's Xi Jinping can show strength.
Yes.
That they're not sitting idly by while this all happened. They vowed fire. They will rain down fire on this. So here you go. This could be the first step in the invasion process. Why amass that many tanks, all of those ships, all of those artillery, and those amphibious vehicles right there?
To be fair, you had the largest military and the biggest bullies of the world coming close to your country. So you probably should be prepared, because we're likely to just drop willy-nilly bombs. Well, that's what
already,
we do.
We've been
that's
there.
Our MO.
Of course, you know, right. Of course, that's, again, that's why we've been there. So,
the United States does not have the largest military by way of personnel. We only have the largest military by way of budgetary numbers, spending,
right.
Weapons.
Not by people.
But not at all by people. Yeah. And in fact, the people that we do have, we don't pay them very well either. So China actually has larger spending per person than we do. But yes, you're right. The United States is, you know, sort of waves. It talks the biggest game. Now, someone in our chat just pointed out, just gave us a $5 super chat. Thank you. And said, well, China lied, basically implying that they bluffed, right? Which is an interesting take on this because some hours have passed and we haven't seen the explosive fallout just yet. We've only seen sort of news pundits like us saying, whoa, this is serious and asking major questions. But we just don't know how this will play out beyond sanctions, right? Why this military movement and why sort of draw these battle lines at this point when the United States is already involved in several other conflicts? I think those are pressing questions, even if we're kind of exhaling like, oh, she got out safe. Okay, we made our point.
But let's wait a second. Let's pull back. I want to unpack that a little bit. Thank you for whoever provided that comment in our chat. China never said anything about an attack. And this is very important to remember. If you look at the analysis of this over the past 48 hours, China never specifically said anything that they were going to do. This was Western media pundits and bloggers all bloviating over the past 48, 72 hours. This is going to happen. China's going to do this. They're going to launch a nuclear strike. They're going to do this. China didn't say anything. All they said was they were going to have a strategic ramifications, and we don't know what that means. It could mean 5 days from now. It could mean 10 days from now. So this idea that they bluffed, we haven't seen that yet. And look at the video of the Chinese, China mobilizing along all throughout China and putting hundreds of tanks in the ready for a possible invasion of the Kinmen Islands and beyond. Like, okay. And by the way, whenever like Western bloggers who don't know what they're talking about are sort of bloviating about this stuff, the only people that really know, it's just like Putin in Ukraine. The only people that really know what's about to happen are like Xi Jinping and his inner circle.
Sure.
Right? Nobody who on CNN knows what they're going to be doing.
Yes, absolutely right. So, you know, I just think it's too early to exhale and say, okay, well, nothing happened. But we also can't, you know, over extrapolate what they will do. We don't know at this point. There is some validity to wanting to validate Taiwan as an independent place. Sure, you can feel that way emotionally, right? But for the speaker to have gone out of her way to take photos and make this photo opportunity where there's a lot of risk, there's a lot of lives at stake. We don't know what is the way to support someone's sovereignty, but this was an extremely dangerous and costly way.
So let's look more at the military side of this before we get to Nancy Pelosi's opinion piece that she wrote
sure.
in the Washington Post. So here's what here's the latest on this. The U.S. sending four more warships to the region at this hour. And Nancy Pelosi's airplane, of course, as we mentioned, was escorted by up to 8 U.S. Air Force warplanes. If you look at the surrounding red blocks on your screen here, these are the areas where China has essentially encircled Taiwan. And then if you take a look at this, also this chart, this is in Chinese, but you'll see they're crossing the line path here, the median path here. This is just the beginning. This is an area where these ships have now crossed over, at least 22 of the aircraft reported having crossed the Taiwan Strait median line. You don't go across that line. And a large group of 27 Chinese planes, according to Tyler Durden this afternoon, breached Taiwan's air defense identification zone. So they're running all sorts of sorties and everything right over these lines that they have not crossed and they don't cross. And then, of course, you know, you have the tanks and everything ready to move into Kinmen Island. So, but Nancy Pelosi had the gall and, you know, she wrote an opinion piece and clearly it was put together by her team. And it was released just as she was landing, right? You want to go through this?
Yeah. So it's an opinion piece called Why I'm Leading a Congressional Delegation to Taiwan. And she talks about how the United States has had a longstanding relationship with Taiwan and has promised to support them in their independence. Yet she still says our visit in no way breaks up the current status quo of the United States one China policy. It's confounding. She says we need to stand by because we believe that Beijing has intensified tensions with Taiwan and that the People's Republic of China has ramped up patrols of bombers, fighter jets, and surveillance aircraft near or even over Taiwan's air defense, leading the U.S. Defense Department to conclude that China's army is, quote, likely preparing for a contingency to unify Taiwan with the People's Republic of China by force. So she's saying, we are worried about conflict there. We do think that they might invade. And so me coming here shows that we won't stand for this, and we will come right back if this happens.
Do you buy that? I mean, here's what the way I look at it is, you going there leads to an invasion. Like, again, it's poking the bear. And to me, this is almost like what they want. They want this to happen.
Yes.
They were going to Taiwan to give them a reason, to give China, whom, you know, they pretend to not really love, but they actually do really love them. Just look at the Biden's cozy relationship with China. You know, again, why are we so quick to send billions of dollars to fight in Ukraine, but we cozy up to China? Again, this is exactly what happened. So it in my mind, I'm throwing this out there as a conspiracy theory, because you have to ask yourself, why would you go there? Under what reason would you go there?
How does it benefit America at all? I really can't follow the logic, right? Our visit in no way contradicts the longstanding one China policy. Like, we still believe they don't exist, but we will defend them if they do exist.
Right. We've already been sending them weapons. Like, we've already been sending them billions of weapons. We've been training them. And if they were invaded, we would never be able to first of all, Taiwan would not be able to protect itself. Okay. It would be destroyed. And we would not be able to go and affect any kind of big change either. We are not prepared in any kind of way to launch an absolute kind of massive, protection of Taiwan in the South China Sea that far from the United States. It's not going to happen.
I don't know.
We can't do it.
I don't know, man. Didn't you watch the War Games? You know how that played out?
Yeah, the War Games you're referring to was on Meet the Press a few months ago. And Meet the Press did this, like, NBC game out scenario where they're like, we're going to come back from commercial break and we're going to play a war game to see what would happen if China actually invades Taiwan. It didn't end well, and it would be mutually assured destruction in the simulation. Yeah. But I thought, so it was interesting. Nancy Pelosi's piece sat on the Washington Post right next to this other opinion piece, literally on the same website. And it said this: the damage from Pelosi's unwise Taiwan visit must be contained. Like a counterpoint, like sat right next to it, like side by side.
Right. I mean, there were very few in the media at the very least who were saying, this sounds like a great idea. We need to do this. Although it does seem like several Republican senators have said, yeah, we've always said we need to be tough on China. This is a great thing. We're reaching across the aisle. So of all the things that will not get bipartisan support, right, this seems to be something that at least they can agree upon is like, is there another war that we can lend lease some weapons, make some money, drum up support and patriotism? We like it. Okay, do it.
Well, and just out of curiosity, is she going to go to Palestine next? Is that next on her list of marginalized people to go help?
I don't have any idea. I don't know what her itinerary is, but clearly it's not in the United States while her husband this afternoon was being arraigned for a DUI and pled not guilty this afternoon. So, isn't that kind of weird? Like, she literally leaves the country when her husband is going in front of a judge.
Well, okay, but we could also see that as a very expensive decoy.
Right, I guess.
Right? Nobody look at him over here. Look at me landing in a place that's highly controversial and dangerous for many people that I don't care about.
Maybe we should talk about the Taiwanese people, right? Like, what do they want? Like, we're talking about the United States and why is this good for the United States? What about the Taiwanese people? Well, of a poll that just came out, conducted by Taiwan's United Daily News website, says that 61% said the trip was not welcome. In a poll of nearly 7,500 readers, the website said 61% said the trip was not welcome, and it may destabilize the Taiwan Strait. Only 38% welcomed the visit. So, and by the way, like, if you saw some of the protest videos, they've been suppressed. It's, you can't really find them. They're hard to find. But there were plenty of people protesting, tearing American flags in half, telling Nancy Pelosi to leave, get out of here. They called her a witch. They told her to get out of this island. You're destabilizing the region. Get out of here. Leave now. They called her all sorts of other names.
I just want to say that's not what witches do.
Okay. But that's what they called her.
Yeah.
They called her Nancy the witch. Okay. They called her Nancy the
witches
old witch.
Float.
No,
which
is this is really offensive to witches. She's not a witch.
She's a witch. She's not a witch. Burn her anyway.
No, no, this is not a witchy move. I'm just saying this.
Good Monty Python references. But nevertheless, how is the United States responding to this? What about warmongers? You know, you mentioned the Republicans were all on board with this. I think we had 25 different Republicans who signed off on her visit. Mitch McConnell among them thought it was a great idea. So it's kind of weird to watch these Republicans because they really want this. They want us to have some massive conflict with China. They love this idea. This is all the focus. Mike Pompeo, liar in chief himself, former head of the CIA, former what was he under?
Secretary of State.
Secretary of State under Trump. I like to think of him as the CIA because that's where he really got his bread and butter. You know, he calls again this China bluster. He's like, look, this is ridiculous. China, what did he really do? What did she really do in China? Not in Taiwan, nothing. Listen to Mike Pompeo.
The challenge from the Chinese Communist Party isn't Republican or Democrat. It's a challenge to the United States of America. When you hear the Chinese response to something, we ought to just take a step back, right? When you hear the Chinese response to the fact that we just had a Speaker of the House travel to a country, all she did was hold some meetings. We didn't land the 82nd Airborne in the western part of China. We didn't launch an attack. We just sent a delegation to another independent sovereign nation. To see this response from the Chinese Communist Party, I think, tells you all you need to know about what America needs to do.
That's very diminutive.
Yeah, he's just like we only sent troops over there to liberate. Yeah, we only sent troops and everything over to liberate Iraq. We didn't go over there to, you know, do anything nefarious.
It's so condescending, yeah. Right? I mean, think about it in reverse. Let's just pretend it was Puerto Rico, okay? And now China decides to send a delegation to talk about Puerto Rico's freedom and democracy.
Yes.
As a sovereign territory. Right. And they land there with 8 warships. Like, what would the United States do in Puerto Rico? Maybe not the best analogy, but it's close. It's, you know, I know you can pick apart like pieces of it and say, well, they're not. But you know what I mean? Right. In our own backyard, that close to mainland United States.
Yes.
And this is what.
Well, then the Monroe Doctrine would matter. So the all the stuff that we signed with Russia and everything that we wouldn't expand NATO and all of that doesn't matter. But if they did that, the Monroe Doctrine, we'd be like, no. We've got documents. You know, it matters when it affects us, but documents don't matter when it affects other people.
Yeah, we have a document from the 1800s under President James Monroe that says nobody from the East can set up shop basically in the Western Hemisphere. It's ours. Like the Western Hemisphere belongs to the United States, right? And China's supposed to adhere to this Monroe Doctrine from the 1800s, something that we wrote up. Like it's our own doctrine. Mm-hmm. Like we have to adhere to
that. And I think in Russia it was the Minsk agreements, right? And
yeah,
the Minsk agreements were, you know, that we wouldn't expand NATO and things like that. And tell me one treaty or anything like that that the United States has ever kept. Like we just don't keep our treaties.
No. And this afternoon we should mention that Finland and are being voted on by the Senate and expected to be signed today to join NATO. Finland, am I missing Sweden,
is it
right?
The Netherlands?
Finland and help me out here, guys. Finland and
yeah, I'm not
Sweden.
Sure
on
that one.
Sweden.
It is Sweden. Okay. I knew it was a country that started with Swa. I couldn't remember. It's one of those.
Swahili.
There's so many to choose from.
Swaziland, Switzerland, Sweden. I couldn't remember. But at least I thought, okay. So that's the very latest there in China. We're going to continue to watch like the fallout from this. As someone earlier said, you know, China bluffed. Well, we don't know yet. We don't know what their plans are. And it's still just a few hours from whence she left. And by the way, they already launched a cyber attack against the presidential infrastructure in Taiwan. They've already launched a denial of service attack. They're amassing troops and they've already flown over areas that they said they wouldn't under treaties, right? So they've already broken through treaty lines. So are they going to do anything more than that? We shall see.
And when we talk later in the show about Ukraine and the Russian conflict, we will see how the battle lines being drawn make it more important, because it does seem very clear that in this conflict, China has remained neutral. But if we force their hand, they're not going to choose Western side.
Right. So we've got a lot more news to get to here. Please smash that like button. I saw someone in the chat just said, hey, we have 11,000 people watching, but only 2,000 likes. So let's get it up to like 5,000 likes at least.
Yes, please.
All you got to do is just smash the like button. It's very simple to do. And we've got more news we're going to get to here on the show. We are going to talk about next. What is Pfizer hiding? What is the United States and this relationship with Pfizer and the White House? It's very, very interesting. So that we've got that coming up next. We're going to look at why we continue to funnel billions of dollars to Pfizer for things that aren't really working. So I don't know. Maybe you can explain to us in the chat why that's actually happening. We're also going to look at the truth in Ukraine, as President of Russia, Vladimir Putin, just weighed in on that, and possible peace talks that are going to be shot down thanks to Vladimir Zelensky. And we've got more news on that. But first, my fellow Americans, I want to tell you about, if you've got an IRA, you've got a 401k or a savings account, things are scary out there right now. And the Biden administration has already printed more money in the past 2 years than the previous 100 years combined. The national debt just hit a record $30 trillion. Nancy Pelosi's trip to Taiwan cost $90 million yesterday. $90 million. And Americans can't afford rent, can't put food on the table. But that's okay. Nancy Pelosi can go to Taiwan. Inflation, it's its highest it's been since 1982. It's only a matter of time before the House of Cards comes down. And again, this is probably why the United States is fighting so fiercely right now and looking at China and China hegemony, trying to protect American hegemony and the U.S. dollar. You need to protect your family, though. And that's where Gold Co. comes in. If you talk to our friends over at Gold Co., you can protect your retirement with gold and silver before it's too late. You need to put your money in actual precious metals, okay? And they are going to give you $10,000 or more in free silver when you open up a qualifying account. And here on your screen, see in the little red line there, it says redactedlikesgold.com. That's the website you need to go to. So redactedlikesgold.com, they'll give you $10,000 or more in free silver when you open up a qualifying account. Again, my friends at Gold Co. will give you $10,000 or more in free silver when you open up a qualifying account. Again, redactedlikesgold.com is the place to go.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the pandemic. Let's talk about COVID, and let's talk about the president's diagnosis and his treatment with the Pfizer drug Paxlovid. Interestingly enough, the president, you may know, tested positive for COVID, said he was doing better, and then tested positive again. This is known as a rebound case. And let's take a look at the president telling us now for the second time that he's better.
I've just tested negative for COVID-19 after isolating for 5 days. Thankfully, I'll
really?
Not be able to return to work in
person. I apologize. This was the first time. It's a Groundhog COVID day. This was the first time the president tested negative and then went on to test positive just a few days later. So what is up with rebound COVID? And what is something, here's a little pop quiz, what is something that President Biden and Dr. Fauci have in common with their COVID diagnosis? Two things. One, they took the Pfizer drug, Paxlovid, and they had rebound COVID. So this begs the question, why does the White House continue to push Pfizer's Paxlovid when we have this data starting to emerge?
Congresswoman Representative Mary Miller asked that same question. She tweeted this today. She said, Biden received 4 shots of the vax, 2 doses, 2 boosters, and still became so sick he needed 30 pills of emergency use Paxlovid and now has something called rebound. Why are we firing healthy soldiers over this vaccine? That's a good question, right? Like, why are we being told that you need this because it'll protect you from getting sick? And when you're loaded up on this stuff, you get sick. Like, good questions, right? For people who've lost their jobs.
Valid questions. Sure. Right. Absolutely valid.
Now, you remember when, here's a flashback, because I want to unpack this Paxlovid stuff here and why the White House is continuing to funnel billions of dollars to Pfizer. Do you remember, though, in 2021 when Pfizer told us this? This was the report back then, that one dose of Pfizer vaccine may protect COVID-19 victims from reinfection, in according to this new study. And so Pfizer then, you'll remember Pfizer CEO, they were all on TV talking about this, and they were all over CNBC and Bloomberg. They were all, one of these. All you need.
The head of the CDC.
Fall away. Yeah.
The head of the CDC even came out and said it.
Yes. To be fair, though, this was before all the variants started flying about, and they were able to, sort of say, well, these variants, the vaccine was not developed for them. So
was it, though? This was, look at this article. This is August 6th, 2021.
I believe we started to know about Delta, and excuse me if I'm wrong, but my memory of writing the newsletter is that Delta really came to the forefront in mid-August.
Okay. Let us know in the chat, in the comments, let's fact check this in real time. Like, when did we first start hearing about Delta? Because I feel like we even started hearing about Delta in 2020. We started as we went towards the Christmas time of 2020, we started hearing about, I'm sorry. Yeah, of like the spring of 2020 into the summer.
Yeah, it says it was first identified in India in late 2020.
Okay.
Yeah, I feel like we already knew about these variants, and I feel like we were hearing from these CEOs, no, these vaccines they're going to protect you against these variants too. That's why one dose, you should be good to go. No worries here. Maybe now a second dose. Maybe a booster. Then once you get to another booster, and now Paxlovid, and now you got to go on this. And then you get a rebound case. So here is President Biden tweeting this about it, right? Paxlovid, this is after his first diagnosis, right? This is the day after that little press conference we just saw there, before his second rebound. He said, Paxlovid is a game changer in our fight against BA5. Doc prescribed it to me when I was COVID positive. The drug reduces risk of hospitalization and death by about 90%, and you can access these pills for free at tens of thousands of local drugstores around the country. Free? Oh, free. Interesting, right? But of course, we've given them billions of dollars, right? You, the taxpayer, have foot the bill and paid Pfizer billions of dollars.
And we even paid for the research. We've paid for the research and development. We paid for the launch. We've paid for basically all of it. And so they don't have to pay us back for the research. They just get to keep that money. And they get all these billions of profit that they're making over the top of it. And I also want to recommend that people look into what Peter McAuliffe and Robert Malone have said about Paxlovid that drug, because just look that up and listen to what they've said about it.
Yeah. In fact, follow Dr. Malone or follow Dr. McAuliffe on Twitter and see what he has to say about it. But here's the American Conservative, which, Pfizer gets big bucks from this. Biden pays big bucks for Pfizer's latest flop. The Biden administration is paying $10.6 billion in taxpayer money for Pfizer's unoriginal and ineffective COVID-19 drug from Paxlovid. So let's go through this piece. The Federalist wrote a really interesting piece today where they kind of dissected this. So let's go through some of the sticking points in this, shall we?
Well, specifically, though, it's around the rate of rebound, which originally we were told is rare, less than 1%, right? These are rebound cases with Paxlovid as a treatment, right? So originally we were told, no, it's about 1%. Then we were told it's 5.4%. And then 10%. And then just last week on CNN, medical analyst and professor at George Washington University said that the newest strain of COVID has a 20 to 40% or even higher risk of rebound when coupled with this drug, right? And so, okay, those are important. Those are important data points. That means that the efficacy of this treatment is lower to the tune of maybe even 60%, right? And of course, you would think, well, Paxlovid is usually only given to people who are high risk or elderly, which the president is, right? So it doesn't take a genius to know that two cases of COVID is bad for someone who's at risk, especially someone whose immune system is compromised because they have just fought off a virus. And then now they have to take it again, right? So we need questions. We need answers to these questions.
And so the Federalist asked this question, if you want to take my laptop here, Philip. If Paxlovid causes more COVID, why has the White House spent billions on it? That's a good question, right? So if we go through and we look at why have they continued to spend billions on it, they, you know, and they're asking specifically, why make high-risk patients sick twice, as Natalie was just saying? Rebound COVID post-Paxlovid raises a critical public health and drug safety concern. According to the National Institutes of Health, only high-risk populations are supposed to get Paxlovid. But taking Paxlovid sometimes opened up those same high-risk patients to rebound infection. So again...
So this is... So, you know, people with actual like data simulations need to run the calculation of, is it more dangerous to give these people this treatment with a risk of a rebound than letting them fight it off naturally, knowing that the current variant normally shows mild symptoms, right? These are important questions to run simulations on.
Right.
Well, then also you need to look at the drug that we cannot say on this channel. John Campbell, who is another YouTuber that you should follow on this, compared Paxlovid with that drug and found that other drug to be far superior to this, but yet, because, well, I don't even want to get into that, but
he compares the molecular composition. He draws the molecular structure and he shows you that it is almost identical, Paxlovid, to the drug that we call people crazy for mentioning because it also is used in farming. I think it's interesting to also look at some of the other drugs on the market and how they are in fact being pulled off for their efficacy. If we can pull up this screen about Regeneron, I'm sorry to skip ahead. But just today, the antibody treatment that President Trump took when he was diagnosed with COVID, called Regeneron, was taken off the market and they stopped their 4 clinical trials because the data suggests that its efficacy had waned in the face of the surging Omicron variant. So if you take a look at this, according to this report, the company terminated the trials, which ranged from early to late stage because of emerging SARS-CoV-2 variants impacting susceptibility to study the drug. Recent updates on clinical trials.gov.state. So who does that leave now, right? So with Regeneron, which again, you know, at one point we thought, oh, maybe this is our key to treating patients with COVID. It seemed to work fine for President Trump. What's happening here? So who's left? Well, in terms of COVID therapeutics still on the market, it's Pfizer with Paxlovid. And that's about it. There is still a Merck pill called Lagevrio.
Yeah, if you go to the CDC's website, you can see the two that are like generally mentioned for this as a prescription. But, for the vaccine. Go ahead, David.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say, and the reason that is, and this is pretty common knowledge by now, but if there is another drug that can take care of COVID, like it can get rid of it, they can't have that on the market to get emergency authorization to use. So the reason there cannot be another drug that they say, oh yeah, this could help or this could help, is because all of these drugs have been released with emergency authorization, meaning they didn't have to be fully approved to be in the market. So none of these drugs are fully approved. They've just got emergency authorization. And so these others fall off because of that, because they cannot have that with another drug that does anything positive.
And that perhaps is the biggest part of this story. I mean, the money piece that we're funneling to them is one thing, but this emergency use authorization stuff where we're skipping trials. And in fact, I'll put this up on the screen here on thefederalist.com if you want to take my screen here. The White House foolishly chose to pay Pfizer $10 billion for Paxlovid based on a highly preliminary pilot study showing nearly 90% effectiveness, which later dissolved into its study and failing and being voluntarily discontinued by Pfizer prior to its completion. Paxlovid failed its trial endpoints when compared to the placebo group. So if you took the placebo, you did better.
Yes.
Perhaps the Biden White House didn't realize that the informal preliminary pilot studies are never conclusive and results need confirmation with a formal clinical trial. Regardless, the White House did not wait until the formal trial was complete before handing out $10 billion of taxpayer money to run right down the drain at Pfizer. All right, let's talk about Ukraine now. Maybe you were paying too much attention to what Nancy Pelosi was doing in Taiwan. There's actually a war unfolding still in Ukraine, and Russia troop advancements are pounding Ukrainian targets And it looks like utter collapse is unfolding as we speak. There's a couple of really big developments in Ukraine we wanted to talk about this afternoon on the show. I think we first, though, should start with, I think the biggest, arguably the biggest story out of this is what Russian President Vladimir Putin and Russia's government has said over the past 24 hours about the United States' involvement in Ukraine.
Right. Russian President Vladimir Putin is saying now that the United States is actively involved in the war against Russia. So there's no more hiding it. There's no more flirting with the idea, right, as the United States continues to do victory laps about all of the weaponry and the money that it is sending into Ukraine while maintaining that it will not enforce no-fly zones. It will not put boots on the ground. Russia says that stuff doesn't matter anymore. We know you're involved. We now consider you involved. And so that makes us formally enemies.
Here's the front page of Al Jazeera this afternoon. Russia accuses U.S. of direct involvement in Ukraine war. The Russian Defense Ministry on Tuesday said Washington was directly involved in the war in Ukraine after Ukrainian officials detailed Kiev's cooperation with the United States before launching strikes with U.S.-provided HIMARS rockets. And then here's further proof of this involvement in the piece. Let's pull this up here. All this undeniably proves that Washington, contrary to White House and Pentagon claims, is directly involved in the conflict in Ukraine, the Russian Defense Ministry said in a statement. It is the Biden administration that is directly responsible for all Kiev-approved rocket attacks on residential areas and civilian infrastructure in populated areas of Donbas and other regions, which have resulted in mass deaths of civilians, the defense ministry said.
Okay, so those are very scary words, especially if you are an American, right? That your government has been supporting a conflict with a major world power, and that world power now says you're involved too, right?
Yeah, it's beyond scary. It's truthful, especially when journalists have been covering this and have been reporting what unfolded at that prison where Ukrainian POWs were starting to do television interviews and revealing war crimes. And they were revealing what these people were actually doing in these residential neighborhoods. And so here's one way to fix it. Use HIMARS and attack the prison and take out those POWs. And that's exactly what they did. Eva Bartlett doing some amazing reporting in that area and showing the bombing of that prison. So again, this is what Russia's saying. Hey, you have these HIMARS. You have 16 that have been transported there so far. 20 in total are coming. 16 are there. Four of them, we claim Russia, saying that they have now destroyed. The United States says that's not the case. You haven't hit any of them, which is kind of funny when you think about it, right? Because the U.S. has admitted they can't track any of these weapons, right? But they happen to know where these are. So do you see the hypocrisy here? We don't know where the weapons go when they enter Ukraine. They kind of go into a black hole. But we know that you didn't hit these, even though there's photographic and video evidence, in fact, that, yes, Russia did destroy these HIMARS vehicles.
Now, China believes that the United States is involved in this conflict as well. China today told the U.S., we see you. Withdraw your nuclear weapons from Ukraine. The director general of the Chinese Foreign Ministry Arms Control Department said that the U.S. should withdraw all its nuclear weapons from Europe and refrain from deploying nuclear weapons in any other region. China referred to a nuclear sharing program and said that this will not fly if you try it in Asia. So, you know, all of this pretending that you're involved in a conflict but not being involved in a conflict, it's not going over anymore with the major powers of the world, not Russia and not China. So this official further said, any attempt to replicate the NATO's nuclear sharing model in the Asia-Pacific region would undermine regional strategic stability and would be firmly opposed by the countries in the region and, when necessary, face severe countermeasures. Although he did go on to say China will under no circumstances be the first to use nuclear weapons. So even though China doesn't mention Ukraine in this conflict, and China has stayed out of it thus far, it does seem that that China now is getting closer and closer to condemning U.S. involvement in these conflicts and telling the United States what it sees, right? Even though now Ukrainian President Zelensky says that, hey, China, if you're choosing sides, though, we still would really like to have you. If you look at this article, Zelensky says,
And the second big piece of this, we talked about the Putin claiming U.S. involvement. We claimed, well, even the China piece in this. So that's two, three. There's a third piece of this. Just a few minutes ago, Ukraine shot down a call for peace talks with Russia. Ukraine says negotiations with Moscow are contingent on a ceasefire and withdrawal. Now, ex-German Chancellor Gerhard Schroeder stuck his neck into this discussion, says that Russia wanted a negotiated solution to the war and said any dialogue would be contingent on a Russian ceasefire and the withdrawal of Russian troops, Ukraine has said. Ukrainian presidential advisor described Schroeder as a voice of the Russian royal court and made clear that the grain agreement would not lead to any kind of peace negotiations. So we got those grain shipments out of there, but don't think we're going to start talking about peace, because we want to continue this endless proxy war because the United States continues to send us billions of dollars. Now, if Moscow wants a dialogue, he writes, the ball is in their court. First, a ceasefire and withdrawal of troops, then constructive dialogue. That's what Ukraine is saying. So the only way we get to the table is if Russia leaves the Donbas region, right, and leaves protecting Russian separatists and leaves that entire area so it can go back to the 8 years of shelling that it's been experiencing, right? This is the whole reason that they're there in the first place.
Yes.
According to Radio Geneva, Deputy Chancellor Germany Robert Habeck this afternoon, so this was just a few minutes ago, was booed by a crowd in Germany when he told Germans to accept an increase in their cost of energy in order to oppose Russia. He was booed and people yelled, what have you achieved with sanctions? Go away, traitor, you warmonger. I can understand German, not very well, but enough to get by. But here I want to play the audio of him giving this speech and people yelling, you are a warmonger, you are a traitor. What have these sanctions proved? Watch.
Gestärkt hervorgehen. Dann werden wir die einzelnen Krisen bestehen und wir werden als Gesellschaft, als Teil der demokratischen Demokratie gestärkt aus dieser Zeit.
Yeah. So he's there as an advisor. He's like, look, you guys just need to continue to suffer. You guys continue to suffer because we're here to support the or to oppose Russia. That's why you need to pay more for gas and energy and other things and food in Germany. Doesn't really make sense to those protesters.
No, and I don't think that this narrative is landing, that people, you know, are, that politicians call us selfish if we don't want to accept higher prices for goods that are based on a war that we don't agree with. That has not seemed to take off, no matter how hard the mainstream media pushes it.
There's another big development this afternoon, which we should talk about, which is Ukrainian military speaking out and having their voices crushed. We mentioned it. I mentioned it in passing just a little bit at the Russian prison. But reports now from the front line from soldiers who are under just relentless bombardment by Russia. And they're painting a devastating picture this afternoon. This is from Vanessa Beely, reporter, speaking with Ukrainian soldiers and reporting this. I want to read what you see on your screen. This is a massacre, one of the Ukrainian soldiers writes. We can do nothing to those Russians. The Ukrainian media censor published a story told by the commander of the AFU unit, presumably a platoon or a company leader in the 21st Brigade. He fights Russians at the town of Pesky in Donetsk. Well, it's not really a fight. It's more like suffering from constant shelling, he says. They don't even strike back, as the intensity and the artillery fire weight is too high. He says it's a massacre, a bloody bloodbath. For the last 48 hours, we've lost 1,000 fellows here. Our biggest loss is yet. We can't keep silence anymore. We do not counterattack, as our ammunition depots are mostly blown up, and the Western artillery systems require too much attention and maintenance when used in these severe conditions. Can you believe that? And then after such stories in Ukrainian media, how do we get, why does the United States government continue to funnel weapons and money? They're saying we can't even leave where we're under constant bombardment. And if we go out and try to use the USA-made weapons that are sitting there getting destroyed, they're either destroyed or they require too much maintenance and...
Or as witnesses are attesting, they're being driven off in private vehicles that never actually make it to the battlefields that we would actually want to support.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they're being sold on the black market.
Yes.
Yeah, they're being sold on the black market and being driven away, and they're making hundreds of thousands of dollars on it. I mean.
So what kind of leader sees this kind of loss in his people and doesn't try to negotiate for some kind of peace to save lives now in order to save property, right? Who does that? Who supports that?
This guy, Vladimir Zelensky this afternoon. Instead of wanting to negotiate a peace and saying, bring our boys home, instead is pushing for a draft, right? A draft to bring more people into the military so they can go and be killed. But he says, he describes the fighting as hell. And he says, we need more artillery and manpower. We need more weapons, these HIMAR weapons from the United States. We need, so he gave a 5-minute address and thanked President Biden for sending rocket artillery. He said they've been very effective, which is a total lie. They
haven't been effective. He says they have inflicted more painful losses on the Russians when his brigades are not echoing that experience at all.
Right. They're not. They're being absolutely destroyed. And as you can hear from reporting, we're going to have Eva Bartlett on the show tomorrow to talk about her reporting in this region. Absolute desperation right now. And they are being destroyed. And so when you hear from German Chancellor, former German Chancellor Gerhard Schroeder saying, come to the table. It's time to start negotiating a peace. We're hearing other reports this afternoon from other Ukrainian officials who are sort of like reluctantly speaking out, saying this is done. It's collapsed. The last holdouts are gone. The front lines have collapsed in Donbas. It's time to hang up your hat and go home, because they're not going to, Russia's just not going to give up this territory and walk back into Russia. That's
no,
not going to happen.
No, and they believe that they are fighting for peace there and on behalf of Russian ethnic Russians in the region. And it's not as clear as the fact that many in that region do support their presence.
Please make sure you're subscribed to the channel and smash that like button here. We do a daily newsletter we should always tell you about. If you go to redacted.inc, it's redacted.inc. Tell them what they get when they sign up for the newsletter.
You get a newsletter every day written by us and full of information, as well as what else? Besides the newsletter, you get the newsletter.
You get a newsletter in the newsletter. It's remarkable. You can read it over your cup of coffee first thing in the morning by signing up at redacted.inc.
Well, it's war games time. How would you like to play a game of Provoke North Korea?
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea because we don't have enough wars right now that the United States is involved in. How many wars are we involved in? Like 10 at the moment? Let's start a new one with North Korea.
Right. So the United States is now launching war simulations and war practice games. And who is the target? North Korea. South Korea is involved in these too. And it's a joint military exercise, the first one in 5 years. And reports are that North Korean leader Kim Jong-un is really freaking out about them.
He's really upset about it. So the first joint military exercise in 5 years, the Americans, South Koreans will polish up what military are calling the kill chain, in which they target North Korea's missile and nuclear sites and go for a decapitation, meaning an assassination of Kim Jong-un. So all in one attack. This is what would unfold, right? So you're going to go after another world leader in an assassination attempt. Now,
they use the term decapitation to sort of infer that you would take out the leader, right? So that it would...
take the head of the snake off is what they call it.
Right? Exactly that, right. It's not a literal procedure, although if you are the person that they are practicing this move about, you wouldn't like to hear that, I'm sure.
No, this mere identity, this mere mention of this, that this is what the United States and South Korea are planning, according to analysts saying that this has infuriated Kim Jong-un. I want to know, like, how do these analysts get information out of North Korea? Like, really? It's like, to me, this sounds like phony liberal press stirring the pot.
Well, yeah, because it's not like he's not sitting down for interviews.
Right.
It's like, right. Hey, we sat down with Kim Jong-un today and we had a really deep discussion about this.
And it is a steel trap, right? You can't go there. You can't get media out of there.
Right.
I don't know who would know that this is freaky. And some analysts are saying, you know, it's making him so paranoid. They're starting to run more drills in retaliation. They've already been sort of talking about nuclear proliferation and running their seventh test, the first since 2017, and that he only travels at night because he is, you know, sort of so freaked out that the raid on the Al-Qaeda leader just earlier this week was his worst nightmare. So who knows? I mean, how do we know? You know, this is kind of like the media telling us how Putin feels, right? How other leaders feel. We really we don't know.
Well, I mean, so this and the U.S. is not saying one way or the other whether or not they're actually doing this. This course comes on the heels of what we understood from North Korea doing military exercises a few weeks ago, nuclear tests and nuclear drills. So reports are that one of Kim Jong-un's biggest fears is being caught out in the open in a drone attack. I mean, isn't that all of our fears, though? Like, somebody could make that up and say that that's one of the big fears, that he could be killed.
Sure. Like, and I mean, it's sort of retired diplomats who say that, right? So, how do they know? What connections do they have? We can't really say, although I am the kind of person who gets very anxious when I walk around and see drones in the air. I don't like it. Even sort of civilian drones, like play drones.
Yeah, even when my son is playing with his drone, you're like, what is that? Who's coming
the for other me? Day I so. Was working in my office and my son and my nephew were flying their drone outside the window behind me, and I was like this, and I heard this. And it was flying right behind me. And they're like, did you see that?
Yeah.
So, yes, I am. That's nowhere on the level of Kim Jong-un's fear.
So let's unpack this. I mean, this is, if we do a dry run, like this is what the United States and South Korea are planning right now, which is a regime change, an overthrow of a nuclear power, right? Why do this right now? Of all times to be doing this dry run, this move while China... while you're stirring the pot with China, while you're actively stirring the pot with Russia, while you're sticking your neck into Syria, while you're sticking your neck into Somalia, while you're launching drone strikes in the heart of Afghanistan, which we're supposed to be out of Afghanistan, right? We're not supposed to be.
I mean, it's kind of obvious.
Afghanistan at all. Is it obvious?
It's kind of obvious to me why we do it, because we have to spend that military budget in order to justify getting it again next year.
I guess. I mean, it also feels like, you know, this is it's just a review on all the people and all the nationalities that the United States thinks that we should mark as our enemies in the run-up to an important election year.
The kill chain is the first axis of South Korea's three-axis defense plan, focusing on the intelligence and strike capabilities necessary to detect and preempt North Korean missile launches. The second is Korea massive punishment and retaliation, which would, of course, have the decapitation with special forces snuffing out the target. One target, and that target is Kim Jong-un. And, you know, if you start to look at and dive deeper into the war games and the plans inside of North Korea, and you start to study, like, the tunnel structure and all of the hidden bunkers and all of those things, I mean, you absolutely think you could go in there and do this into this regime in with some quick, you know, that this is what we're going to do, just overthrow this country in this one swift move, taking out the leader and then launching these strikes and that's it. And you reestablish an entire region.
I don't think that, but, you know, I know the military has much more loftier goals than I would understand.
Yeah. Analysts are convinced North Korea is ready for its seventh nuclear test since 2017. So they're starting to move on this 2017 nuclear test as Americans and South Koreas target Kim Jong-un and his closest allies. So they're saying this decapitation resembles attacks on the North Korean nuclear forces, and that you have to locate the target, refine that location, identify possible munitions that could be used against it. So why, you know, you're going to hit nuclear targets right next to South Korea. How would South Korea even go along with this? You're going to blow up nuclear bunkers where you could have, you know, clouds of radioactive materials wafting down right across the parallel right into South Korea, wipe out an entire, first of all, and then what would China do about this, of course, right?
Yeah, these are major questions and they're extremely dangerous to think about. I have no answers for them.
Another Korean war we could have would make the war in Ukraine, they say, pale in comparison, even if nuclear weapons weren't used. If nerve agents and nukes are used, we would probably see a greater number of deaths here than occurred during the fighting from 1950 to 1953 in the first Korean War.
And so in response, you know, every time it seems like just a news cycle that every 3 or 4 months we get U.S. intelligence saying that North Korea is testing nuclear weapons. All those words come together. you get nuclear, that they continue to test nuclear weapons against international treaties, against doing that, and they don't care, right? It continues to happen. So this is a very dangerous bear to provoke at this point.
Yeah, let us know in the chat and your comments what you think about this. War games dangerous?
It's like or super it's fun. Like the United States goes to the zoo, and it's like, it's not enough that we sit there and we poke the lions. It's like, ooh, there's tigers over there too. Let's go provoke them. And we're just sitting there like provoking all these different things at the same time. And it's just like, at what point are we going to realize that our foreign policy is very dangerous and makes us more unsafe than if we didn't do it this way?
I mean, I think the collapse of the United States, it's the inevitable collapse. You're watching Western civilization in decline.
But because of that decline is why I think, you know, someone who's losing popularity has to go and, you know, pick fights in the cafeteria to prove their strength, even if you lose them.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, it's like Flash Thompson in the Spider-Man comics, right? It's like he's going to go pick on Peter Parker to try to prove his bully status, you know?
Yep, and then every single time along comes a bigger person and takes care of the bully. Every That's time. Right. It's inevitable.
Well, there has been a cozy relationship with the mainstream media and Dr. Fauci. Have you noticed? Maybe over the past few years, it seems that he'll pop up on CNBC. You'll get exclusive interviews on CNN. Remember CNN Plus did their whole behind-the-scenes scoop with Dr. Fauci? It was like their one big story before CNN Plus was pulled off the air and canceled.
It was a big hug about his life and his feelings. And
yeah. How does Dr. Fauci feel about life?
Right.
Right.
Well, this became increasingly apparent this week when Kim Iverson, fellow YouTuber and an independent journalist who we respect here on this show, left The Hill's Rising last week, and her departure was abrupt, and it had to do with the network's coddling of Dr. Fauci. Now, she is known as one of the major voices on that program that's willing to challenge the establishment and ask questions that the rest of the media does not. She explained her departure, and we want to play pieces of it for you because it tells a story of how coddled Dr. Fauci is by the media and how many establishments are willing to bow down in response. So we want to let her explain in her own words how she really did try to give corporate media a shot. Play the first intro here, please.
So as some of you may have heard, I am no longer with Hills Rising. And I know many of you want to know what happened and why there was a sudden departure, so I'm here to explain. Now, a year ago, when I joined Rising, I promised the viewers that though I was working on a corporately owned media show, I wasn't being censored or held back in any way, and I wouldn't be there if I was. Prior to joining Rising, I was doing my own show independently. I was independently funded. And one of the benefits of being independent is that there are no corporate overlords or establishment types meddling with the content. And of course, we have to dance around YouTube's community guidelines. But beyond that, the actual editorial calls are not being made by some establishment hack.
Now, during her year at Rising, she was one of the few people who originally said that the COVID vaccines do not prevent the spread of COVID, right? Which originally on YouTube, you were not allowed to say. Now we can say that. We are supposed to say, we are told that the vaccines only mitigate your exposure to the virus and your reaction to it. They do not stop the spread anymore. But when she said this in August of 2021, she took a lot of heat for it.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't understand. We know now that the vaccine doesn't stop the spread. So I could understand maybe doing a vaccine mandate if there was.
It certainly stops the spread. And
it doesn't stop the spread. We know it doesn't. The science is clear that it's not stopping any spread.
Yeah, and there's that, by the way, that right there is the White House spokesperson, Farah, I forget her last name. Let me do that again. Can we look that up? Farah?
Fawcett?
No. Farah. She was Mike Pence's spokesperson.
Farrah Griffin? Alyssa Farrah Griffin?
Alyssa Farrah. And she was, yeah, she was in the White House.
She was
under Trump.
Yeah, a White House spokesperson.
Alyssa Farrah. Okay, let me do that. 3, 2, 1. And so there in red, that was Alyssa Farrah. She worked in the Trump White House. She was a White House spokesperson. I think she was Mike Pence's spokesperson. She would step in for Kayleigh McEnany from time to time. Anyway, so she's there saying, oh, it absolutely stops the spread.
Right.
And Kim's like, no, what are you talking about? The science is in on that. No, it doesn't. No,
right.
It doesn't.
And the anchor there was willing to say, come on, don't say that. We can't, you know, that's absolutely not the not the truth. We know that now. This is something we are all allowed to acknowledge, that the vaccine does not stop the spread of COVID. So this tough on Fauci and follow the science stance is her brand, right? It is what people come to Rising for. And she has now earned a reputation for being the one to report the truth on COVID, which is why her falling out with Rising, this is where this comes in. Now, this is a bit of a long explanation, but I'm going to let her explain it best.
So when I found out Sunday night that Fauci was going to be on the show, I was excited. This was a moment I had waited for and viewers had waited for. I had questions that I wanted to ask him, like, does he still support mandates for these non-sterilizing vaccines? With mRNAs not succeeding in ending the pandemic, why is he still pushing for them? And many more. I had a lot of questions. But then Sunday night, I got a call from the producers telling me that when they submitted for the interview a couple of weeks earlier, Fauci's team had asked who the hosts were going to be, and they didn't list my name. They told them Batya and Robbie would be the hosts. They said originally the interview was going to be earlier than when I typically show up, and so they didn't think to include me. Now, I dispute this because there have been numerous occasions when a guest who they know I would be particularly interested in talking with is scheduled early, and then they ask me if I want to join to be part of that interview. Sometimes I say yes, sometimes I say no. But I think obviously interviewing Fauci of all people, it would have been one of those times to ask me. So I told the producers that they needed to go back to Fauci's team and tell them I'm in the interview. And if he won't agree to do it, then we make a segment about that. We say Fauci wouldn't face us, that it needed to be all of us or none of us, especially since the interview had been moved to later in the day when I'm there. So I made it clear that anything other than this would cause the viewers to lose trust in Rising. And trust is what matters most. The viewers had flocked to Rising for this content, and to let them down like this would just break their trust completely. So they seemed to understand this Sunday night. Now, the next morning, as I'm ready to join the show and I'm getting ready to do my radar and possibly interview Fauci, I got a phone call from the executive producer telling me that they had made the final decision to not approach Fauci's team, but to instead move forward with the interview without me. They wanted me to come on the show, record a couple of segments, then ask me to leave so that they could interview Fauci. And
oh,
I expressed that this was a giant mistake, that the viewers would no longer trust the show, that I had told viewers I wouldn't be censored or held back, and how can I go back to the viewers after this and say with a straight face that I'm not being censored or limited? How am I supposed to do that?
Yeah. How?
Well, and can I point out really quick, you know, before Kim even went to the Rising, Sagar and Crystal Ball were part of that show, and they kind of did the same thing to them. They got rid of them because they were talking about things they didn't really want them to talk about. And that already lost a lot of trust with that show. And that's when I stopped watching. I was like, I am no longer wanting to watch that. It became just another, you know, mouthpiece for the establishment. But then when Kim went back on, I was like, okay, now I like her content. I like what she's talking about. So I actually went back. So they were are in the process of reestablishing trust, and now they'll never get it back.
I agree with you. The only reason I would watch that show after Crystal and Sagar left was to watch Kim's segments. And she, I don't think she was on all the time. And so when she was on and I would see a segment with her, I always sort of questioned, like, why is she, you know, why does she even want to moonlight with them? You know, I mean, I get the allure of it anyway. Look, I worked in the mainstream media for 20 years.
Yes, but you can also feel like you are one in a room where people are only willing to talk about whatever is inside the box, and you're the one willing to expand the horizons. Like, that's a useful position.
I totally agree with you. I felt that way when I was at Fox. Like, okay, I can be the one who, I'm not Democrat, I'm not Republican, I'm an independent. I can ask tough questions of Donald Trump. I can kind of walk the middle, you know, I can ask the questions that I want to ask inside the corporate bubble.
Right.
But, you know, like, as Noam Chomsky famously says, right? It doesn't matter. Like, when you work for these corporate beasts, it doesn't matter how independent you think you are.
Mm-hmm.
You still work for the corporate beast. You can try as much as you want to say,
but I do think
that you're still there.
She brought a lot of sense to a lot of people who otherwise would not have reached out to that content. I do think that it moved the needle on a lot of people's understandings of very complex situations, such as the war in Ukraine and the pandemic and more, right? I think that she does say, I don't regret what I've done here. I don't regret having been here. I want this show to succeed because I care about the people who work for it. There's a lot of things that she did there that I was exposed to that I wouldn't have otherwise. But being left out of this interview when she was already going to be in the building, and for them to say, we can't tell them it's you.
Because, that's ridiculous.
Right. And yeah, and so absurd. You will then leave the set, even though you are the one who has led the coverage on the science that does not support what the government has disseminated.
First of all, and it's a bullshit thing to say. Like when I was at Fox, they would say, hey, Clayton, on Thursday, a time you're normally not here at that time of day, we know you would like to interview President Obama's pilot about his interaction with this UFO, whatever, right? Will you come in and do that interview at this time?
Yes. But it could have been somebody who didn't know that Clayton liked UFOs, who may not have offered. That is a plausible explanation.
But that's not what she says. They knew, everyone there knew that she was leading this coverage on the pandemic.
Right.
She was the one challenging this narrative, doing
the
homework.
And they were playing with her. So when she found out that he was coming in for an interview, they purposely didn't say, oh, but you're not part of this, right? So they knew at the time when they started talking about Fauci's coming in that she wasn't a part of it. And then she had to get a separate call from a producer saying, well, we have to break this hard news to you. You weren't submitted for this interview, right? And she said, that's unacceptable. This is a game. This is a deal breaker.
And that's like you have to break. You break that news to your host that's been working for you, but you can't break it to a guest that you're going to have a different interviewer.
Right. Like we're currying favor with these guests. And that's the bottom line. That's how this shit works. Like in Washington, right? We'll go on your show as long as we know we're going to get the softball questions. We'll show up if we know who's going to be asking us the questions. What's the structure? And we get to play this game, right? We get to put your name coming up after the break. Dr. Fauci is going to be joining us. Like, you're going to want to tune in for that. But the real story is that we're not going to ask you any really tough questions.
Right.
Because that's how we play this game.
And look, you and I were in the media. We were killed from tons of segments all the time. Some producers like, oh, her, but not her. Right. This just happens. But this is a different thing because of this is basically her beat. Right. This is, and because she is already going to be there and she knows that she's more informed about the questions she's about to ask. And so for them to say, no, we'd rather have, and her alternative was like, look, if he won't face me, that's a story. And The Hill is saying, we don't want that story. We only want the name. Right. And so, you know, I think this is interesting. Now, is it coincidental that mainstream media is struggling with American confidence when people won't make these decisions? So listen to what she says about how this kind of decision would break my trust with my viewers.
What was I supposed to say to viewers after this? How could I say, yeah, you know, it's corporate media, but trust me, guys, I'm not being censored or held back. I mean, up until this point, it was true, but after this, I wouldn't be able to say that. And that would make me a liar, and it would put my reputation at risk because I made promises to the viewers. And so, because of all of this, I am no longer with Rising.
There you go. And she's right. How could she go back on the air after knowing what they did to her and then look at their viewers just to keep that job, just to keep that paycheck coming in? Like, how could she? But what's great about Kim is that she now gets to leave with her integrity. She gets to leave that job. Right. She did a great job while she was there. And then once it was clear that she couldn't do it anymore, based on the parameters that they've set out for her, she gets to leave with her integrity intact.
Which brings us to this story about CNN, right? So now CNN is reporting that profits are dropping below $1 billion for the first time since 2016, which doesn't sound like a big heartbreak, right? But it's not enough money to run a huge conglomerate like CNN with their baseball-sized salaries and their Chris Cuomo-sized settlements and whatnot. Now, rumor has it that CEO Chris Licht has stopped down on travel and made other budget cuts to stop the bleeding. But they are also sort of changing their bent on their coverage after so many years of hysterical Trump coverage, which just gave them the right to be outraged and sort of drummed up, you know, enthusiasm at the very least. They had no identity. Once Trump was gone, the pandemic gave them something to scream about, but they really have not done anything to earn back or even keep viewers' trust. I mean, I could list all, you know, could it be because they pushed a COVID vaccine without asking any hard questions about it? Could it be because they went all in on January 6th committee, which has no judicial authority to punish anyone, but was an obvious ratings ploy? Could it be because they hyperventilated anti-Trump rhetoric and then had nothing when he was gone, right? It's just, these are not, this Kim Iverson choice is not the kind of choice that CNN is making currently.
No, I mean, if you go on CNN's website, it was amazing the other day I saw Michael Tracy tweet, you know, who's president of the United States? And he had a screenshot of articles from CNN's front page, and it was like seven articles talking about Trump. Like, Trump's not the president of the United States right now. I don't know if you're aware of that, but there's somebody else in charge. There's
but
an whole
an addiction, right?
Oh, it's absolutely an addiction. And so, but I want to kind of go back and thinking about what you said about these baseball-sized salaries. Like, for those of you who don't know how the mainstream media works or how these big corporations work, you know, again, we worked in the belly of these beasts. And each show, so when you're watching like CNN and you're watching those shows throughout the day, each of those shows has like 20 to 30 people working on that show.
Yes.
Producers, writers, guest bookers, media relations people, social media people who are pushing out like social media content.
Not to mention the camera crew, the makeup people, the tech, the booth, the people who work in the booth, the editors.
But those people at least float between shows. Most of the production staff typically
is one per
only
show.
Work with that show, and that's it. They'll work on the Chris Cuomo show for an hour. And they work there all day. They book guests. They're working on stories. But they have a huge staff, right? So now Kim gets to go and do her own show with none of that staff. I don't know how many people she has, but like significantly less. And to think that they're making less than $1 billion, they're having to employ thousands of people around the world, and they're churning out this dreck that people are tuning out of.
According to the New York Times and the New York Post, in their prime time, they're getting around 670,000 viewers. That is not a lot for how much money they're spending. I don't know how you sell advertisement to such low numbers. Fox, meanwhile, has not really been bleeding viewers. Their viewers are, you know, viewership is up and they're smoother sailing. MSNBC seems to still not have it. Sizable audience, but at least it's not bleeding at the same rate because the partisan nature of American media is that people have chosen their side and they will flip on that channel, and that's how they tell their neighbors who they are, right? But at the same time, it's just, you know, it's interesting because CNN was very star focused for a long time. Like, we have these people that you trust, very right. Anderson Cooper, this person. And now they're sort of trying to be this centrist network where we're just going to tell you the news because this hysteria, but they can't help themselves, right? They just, I mean, I regularly give them a chance, like, let's turn this on, and they just can't help it. Like, they're never going to be centrist. They always are right-leaning, left-leaning.
Right. Wouldn't it be amazing to have like an actual network that covers the news, and doesn't matter who's president of the United States, they're going to give it to you straight. They're going to call bullshit when they call it. That's why so many people are turning to independent media. I'm literally looking at our live count of our viewership right now as we speak. We don't have to put it up on the screen. But what I'm literally looking at this moment over the past 48 hours is more than CNN's live viewer coverage, like in prime time.
Yeah, that's crazy.
The people that watch this channel from around the world, like, think about that. And when we had the CNN Plus numbers, and this is not to toot our own horn, I do it because I think it's so important to talk about how independent media is, in many ways, it's the answer, I think, to this just onslaught of imperial, intelligence community-led 24-hour cable news networks.
Right.
And so the reason I bring it up is because people are turning it off. They're turning it off, and that audience is dying out, by the way. The people that tune into these networks is dying out. It's getting older and older and older, and people are not buying a cable subscription.
Yes.
They're not signing up for a cable subscription to watch CNN.
Well, my great aunt
really
Betty
hope
loves
that
Anderson Cooper, though.
Your great aunt Betty.
She does.
At some point, I'm really hoping, though, that like the politicians and, you know, the elite start to realize that they're going to have to do interviews with independent media instead of getting all these softballs from the dying mainstream media. Because if they don't, you know, then because right now they won't. Like even Kyle Kulinski and Crystal Ball had Bernie Sanders come into their studio and he refused to have to be there if Kyle was going to be asking him questions. And that's independent media. So it's like right now they're still calling the shots. But as the mainstream media dies more and more, they're going to have no choice but to reach the audience of the independent media because that's going to be the whole audience.
Yeah. That's how Andrew Yang launched his, you know, his campaign essentially was right. Was like going on Joe Rogan's show. I mean, the fact that he was on independent media and he had this groundswell support. He had more support than Kamala Harris did during the primaries. Like, it's because of independent media. And so when you have millions of people on different channels, now there's a lot of these different channels, so you're going to have to go to different places, right? You can't just go one-stop shop, drive into New York City and pop over to CNN Studios and then drive down the street and do Good Morning America and then you're done. Now you've got to reach a lot more people. But the beauty is you can do it from the comfort of your own home. You know, sure. You can like zoom in and do it, you know? I don't know. I'm encouraged by this. I'm saddened that she had to leave under those circumstances. But again, this to me just shines a light on corporate media and the coziness with these corporate politicians. Again, it's all part of one big machine.
And I asked myself, would I have made a choice like that? Because I remember so often just being taken out of things, you know? Like,
yeah, but it was because you got bumped because, oh, there's breaking news, and so we're not going to do your tech segment.
Right,
CBS,
or we're going to do this and we're not crash. Including you. It's just not the same, right? But I think that she made a brave choice because she has to face herself. You know, I was someone who was quite happy working for establishment media, and I might not have seen these nuances the way she, it's a good sort of mirror for all of us to say, would we do this, right? Leave a comfortable job because, and CNN now and all mainstream media has an opportunity to ask the questions they didn't ask during the rollout of the first COVID vaccine, because we're going to get the Omicron variant vaccine in short order, which has not been clinically trialed. And we'll see then if CNN really wants to earn our trust back, then I don't give a crap about what new anchors they have, what new fancy set they have. None of that matters. It's okay, then now ask the questions that are more important that you didn't ask the first time around.
Speaking of independent media, we are not supported by corporate media. So please, all you need to do is just subscribe to the channel. That's one way you can support us here on the channel. Another thing is we have a daily newsletter that's totally free. And because YouTube likes to censor us from time to time, take us offline, you can go to redacted.inc. That's the place to go and sign up for our free daily newsletter. Not .com, it's .inc, redacted.inc. And it's delivered to your inbox first thing in the morning.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you again here tomorrow, same time, same place. We do broadcast Monday through Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern.